Vices Radio Network.
The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, Jordan Peters, and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting. Welcome back to Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Dr. Scott Stevenson and Jordan Peters. Guys, how are you doing? Scott, what's going on, man?
We just discussed this. I'm slightly sleep deprived, just taking care of my older dog. But you know, we're both alive, and it's a beautiful day here. Most of my wake time has been at night. Actually, I'm kind of up all the time just with him doing it due to his doggy issues, but it's a beautiful day, so I'm happy for that. So otherwise pretty good, man.
Nice.
Roof over my head, you know, all the food I can eat, and I got air conditioning. I mean, there's all sorts of things. The checklist could be, you know, thousands of items long, so yeah. Things aren't that bad.
That's a good attitude to have, man. I feel like, especially when I'm dieting and I start feeling, you know, down or whatever, I will write a gratitude list, and I suggest mm-hmm. other people do that too, because there are so many things to be, you know, grateful for. And when you look at all those things, it's kind of hard to be in a bad mood anymore, you know?
That's one of the main life lessons that I have gleaned over the years from dieting for shows, is it provides that provides that contrast. You start to, you know, you get a little bit crabby and, you know, dieter's brain or what have you, and you see things in a negative light, and then you're like, hopefully, this doesn't happen to everybody, of course, but if you have the perspective that you did, you know, you recognize, you have some gratitude, you can make a list. It's like, wow, I've chosen this, you know. Yeah. No one's forcing me to withhold food. Like, this is really quite a luxury that I'm able to engage in here, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that becomes crystal clear, you know, when you're in the throes of a diet. And then the key, of course, is to maintain that perspective, you know, when the diet's over.
True.
It can be hard too, but yeah, that's an important part of, it's one of the intrinsic goods that can be had if you're paying close attention as you diet down.
And it's something you said early on in our podcasting together. It really stuck with me, is the difference between suffering and discomfort, you know, and that I used to use the word suffering, like you really have to suffer to, you know, get what you want out of your diet. And guess what? I don't suffer, you know, I really never did. It was never suffering. It was, it was uncomfortable. That's for sure. But you know, it's always been my choice, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a matter of semantics in a certain sense.
Sure.
I think if you ask many people, but when you then break down the words, you know, suffering is something you don't choose to do, and pain or discomfort is something that you would just assume not have. And you recognize that the pain, and the discomfort of dieting is something you're actually choosing. Like you want that to a certain degree. You want to be hungry because it gives you some feedback that you can use to guide whether or not you're dieting hard enough.
Yeah.
And it also creates, you know, some of the gratification of having, you know, withstood something. But when you sort of break, aside from the semantics being, you know, it's just like, oh, you're just talking whatever, it's, you're just talking shit here, it really helps you through the process.
Yeah.
It clarifies what it is that you're doing, just in the way you're saying. You see, you know, wow, I'm choosing to do this. I want to do this. I actually am seeking out the pain and the discomfort intentionally. So it's not really suffering. but we, you know, that doesn't make for the greatest hashtag or meme or what have you. So, yeah, it's just it's a sort of our way we use the word in Western culture.
Yeah,
that differs. Yeah.
So Jordan, you're dieting now. Are you slipping into, I'm going to use the word, discomfort at this point, or are things, you know, still pretty high as far as food goes?
To be honest, I don't think my food will go particularly low this whole prep.
Yeah.
I'm on a carb cycle at the moment that's pretty manageable, to be honest. I'm the same weight now at 6 weeks out that I was at 3 weeks out last year.
Nice.
And obviously with a little bit more muscle. I didn't push for any more, as you guys know. Like, I kept everything in line in the off season. I didn't push up to a new heavy body weight or whatnot. So there definitely is a few pounds of tissue regardless, just because I'm stronger than ever.
Yeah.
So although I didn't push up to an all new body weight, in the process of pushing back up versus where I ended prep last year, I certainly have put on a couple of pounds of tissue in some certain places. So to be this body weight at 6 weeks out, I'm in a really, really good spot to hit this.
That's so cool.
So I just need to just monitor now to make sure that I don't get too flat and lose strength, lose too much strength. I'm starting to give up reps here and there on the odd thing. But yeah, generally I'm pretty happy. So yeah, just got to push on and get it done now.
I watched one of your videos this morning over at the Trained by JP website. It was the video where you talked about choosing who you surround yourself with. And you've got a really cool team of people. Ooh. I mean, everybody that you're training with. You know, I got a chance to talk with James Hollingshead for Advices Radio, the show itself, last week. Man, he had so many nice things to say about, you know, you and working with you and the work you guys are doing together. And I feel like everything he said about that experience is exactly what you're talking about. And I could hear it in your voice, man, just like the high that you are on having like a great team around you. And yeah. I'm sure that just makes us so much better right now.
It makes it very easy, to be honest. Mm. Like I said in that video, like I have Sass as my training partner, and like I was a little tired at the end of the session yesterday, and like we worked up to shrugs, and like we said this a few times before, but like, how do people shrug seven plates? And I'm like, I can't imagine being able to shrug that. And I nailed my six plate shrug, like I smashed it. And then he was like, do seven plates. And I was like, okay, but like working up to like the shrug, because I was so tired before it. He was like, sit down, I'll load the bar. Hmm. And he loaded all seven plates aside for me on the shrug bar.
What a man. Nice.
And I tried, right? This is what Sass is like. I tried, and he was like, sit down.
I can totally hear him saying that. Yeah, he's like that. I know.
And he actually pushed me away. Physically pushed me away and was like, no. And I laughed, and I said to him, I said, man, I can't wait to repay that favor to you next year.
Yeah.
And I meant that, because I was a little bit embarrassed, because our other friend Elliot is away at the moment, who trains with us, who helps a lot too. But Sass knew that, like, if I had a little bit of rest for that set, and I just sat for a bit, because you can see I was just getting tired at the end of the session, because it was PBs the whole way through. That's a fucking cool thing when someone does that. And like, when I got back home, I thought about it, and I messaged him, and I was just like, I owe you, like, just to be around that is really, really cool. And then obviously that aside, that like genuinely want to help.
Yeah.
But then also the fact that his physique and his mentality is incredibly inspirational in that of itself. It's cool. Like, even yesterday, because we filmed in the session yesterday.
Okay.
And even Rebecca was helping load weights yesterday, our videographer.
Wow, no way.
I know. It was just like, shit, this is cool. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Because like, they know how fucking tiring that is when you start to get a bit depleted and you have to load up like real heavy loads. Yeah. Loading the floor will cost you reps. Like, it really will. Yeah. It's funny. And even, like, she literally, she puts her camera on the floor, starts loading the bar. Like, we went up to the 10 plate T-bar rows yesterday. And then after it, like, again, she was, like, helping strip it down. I was like, man, I'm lucky to be around these people. So I'm very thankful for stuff like that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It is cool. So
it's funny you bring that up, because that's the thing I was going to ask you. I was thinking about, you know, adjusting your training as you diet down. You know, if you're losing reps here and there, I imagine you may have made some adjustments, or you will. But then you've got Sauce on the other. You got a different training situation. This isn't Corin. This is Sauce, who's on the upswing, getting stronger. And then, Corin, you know, you guys could be so disparate. You know, she would just kind of go off and do her own thing. And so that wasn't ever really an issue. But you and Sauce are kind of co-joined, but you're going to have to, like, lessen that. And you just answered my question, is that he's looking out for you, and he's going to know, you know, that you're thinking, you know, today I think I need to, you know, drop a set on this exercise, or I need to go with this instead of this, or whatever you have planned. And he will be there to, like, make sure that you don't try to, you're that competitive fire doesn't try to hop in there and try to do something that doesn't forward your goal for, you know, holding on to muscles. So that's like, he's basically, it's to a certain degree, in a very, in an intimate way, that's important. And I don't mean like, that's sexually intimate. This is closeness, a brotherhood type of thing. He's returning your coaching. He's coaching you back the way a really good training partner could and should and can. And that's fucking great, man.
I posed on, what day is it? I can't even remember, a couple of days ago. And Corin and Sass were both there. And they both, like, again, were like, yeah, this is really good. And for to get that approval from Corin as well is rare. I had to turn around and actually say, shit, you're actually on track condition-wise. That's rare for her to say that to me.
Yes.
She's a fucking bitch when it comes to that. No joke. 2 weeks before that, I posed, and Sass was like, yeah, I think you're on track. And Corin straight away was like, he's behind. She didn't even mix the words. That's all she said, and then she walked off. What was it? Because she just cracked on with her session. She was like, he's behind, and walked off.
Yeah.
So a couple of days ago, she was like, yeah, you're on track. This is good. So that was pretty cool. I'm excited for this. This should be good. I can't see myself making any mistakes from here. I just got to keep my head and just crack on and keep pulling my body weight down, and that's it.
Cool. So what's the actual date of the show?
September 24th.
The 24th. Okay, cool. Yeah, lots of time still.
It was 7 weeks yesterday. So what's cool about it as well is that the day before, I believe the day before, is there's a 212 IFBB Pro show in Seoul as well. Flex is going, Dave Henry's going.
Yeah.
Jose is going. So, and obviously Sass is really good friends with Jose. And I was chatting to Sass as well. And so it'd be cool that they're all out there too. So I'd rather get to watch that pro show and then compete myself the next day. So that should make the trip to Korea even more exciting.
They have fun at that show, dude. I mean, I've seen, Dave's told me about it, like when he's been there with Jose, and you know, his wife will probably be, they have a good time, man. And Dave's lived there twice in Korea, been stationed there. So
I'm really excited about it. Korea is one of those countries that I am excited about.
Yeah. And Jose, I've run into twice. He's like, cool as shit. He was here in Tampa, and just, he's awesome. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but he's awesome. Great guy.
And then Sass is coming with me. Cool. So that's going to make that cool. And so is my other training partner, Elliot. We're all going.
Nice. Oh, shit. Team, baby.
We've booked a suite that's in the host hotel. So we're all going to be there. Regardless of the result, we're going to have a good time. So that's It's going to be a fun trip to Korea.
Hell yeah. It's going to be something you'll never forget, you know, this experience.
Yeah, yeah, it really will. Yeah, it's going to be good. And obviously, like, my other training partner, Elliot, he does some of the videography for the site. So we can pretty much video the whole trip.
Oh, perfect.
It's going to be really, really insightful in that sense, because we'll video the highs, the lows, and the outcome, and all of it, really. And again, the same advantage as always is I get to go into complete detail with my drugs. And what I also looked up as well that's cool is that it's perfectly legal to fly your drugs into Korea.
Excellent. Or as you would say, brilliant. That's the British term, brilliant.
I literally take everything with me, so I don't have to fucking smuggle shit in. Which is always a pain in the ass. Not that I've ever done that, obviously.
Right. Sure, of course.
So that's pretty cool. So I can have everything with me, and we can document that properly. So that should, again, that will show people, again, just another side of things that a lot of people aren't showing.
Like, yeah.
You don't really get to see or hear what people are doing or taking in that final week. And because so obviously for you guys, you have to be very careful because of the law. And then in a lot of countries in the world, you can't just take stuff with you like that. So you have to be somewhat careful. So yeah, everything about this trip, I'm excited for.
That sounds so cool. I can't
wait
to see.
Are you going to hang around for a few days afterwards?
Yeah. We'll stay for a couple of days.
Nice.
Is where we're staying as well is in the Gangnam district, which is like the posh part of Seoul. Huh. So I'm pretty excited for that. Like we're staying in a cool place. So we get to see what Seoul's like.
Well, get that you're gonna have you will have no choice. It'll be obvious, I think, when you get over there. But get some video of the people reacting to you guys on the street.
Oh yeah,
because like, yeah, you're just like it was literally be like Godzilla is there, you know. Because they just trip out, you know, and the fans there short. yeah
they're not like short in height like other Asian countries though, because initially I got a bit excited. I was like, shit, I'm gonna be the tallest. And then a couple of people were like, oh no, Koreans aren't actually that short. I was like, oh damn.
Yeah, but I think, but still, like, they still kind of, like, they're total fans over there.
Yeah, so. they're generally smaller in structure as people, though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They don't tend to have, like, mass monsters out there.
Yeah, the Korean Tank is a pretty big dude, though, whoever that guy is.
Yeah, his quads are fucking stupid.
I know. Every time I see a video, do you know who this guy is, Scott?
I don't know, the Korean Tank. What's his name?
I'm blanking on what his name
Nam
is.
Nam Chow, I think Nam Chow.
Yeah, that sounds about right. His quads look like, you know, he's a synthol freak, but the detail in there doesn't suggest that he's like, no. You know, he's gone like way overboard if he is.
No, that's not synthol. Like, that's just the structure of his like femurs and the way that he squats.
I think so, yeah.
He's a six-plate squatter for reps.
Yep.
So, like, yeah. If you watch when he squats in that freaky kind of narrow Chinese Asian like weightlifting stance.
Yeah, he's got the hip structure for it. Yeah.
Bow their knees out as they squat, and it just makes quads blow up.
Yeah.
Like you can squat like that. So that's he's just a freak.
Wow. Yeah,
and total. He gets hard as nails. I'm looking at his pictures right now. I mean, upper body is still big, but it's just like shredded. And yeah, those legs are out of this world. Those are just ridiculous.
His legs are nutty. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
So, hey, Scott.
Man, shit.
Scott, yeah. How is everything going with your diet now? You know, you had mentioned keeping that gratitude post show, and I didn't want to go into it too far because we still hadn't brought Jordan into the program yet. But you know, I wanted to ask you though. You know, how's that going for you? Because that's where you're at now. You know, we're several weeks past the contest, and your hands are obviously pretty full right now with your dog, and with everything else. You've got a lot of things coming up between, you know, the Fortitude camps and the show coming up on that's the 21st of October, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So
that's so far off from, because I have this whole trip to Arizona that's planned, but yeah, exactly. October 21st in Miami.
Okay, so with all that, I mean, I'm sure you're pretty preoccupied, but how's your training going and how's the nutrition going at this point?
despite, and the one of the things I really wanted to focus on this year is making sure I got plenty of sleep, and it's actually kind of gone the opposite way. Just, you know, I haven't had much choice in the matter. Despite all of that, I'm still pretty happy. I'm still kind of creeping forward in a positive way. I'm just having a blast with my training. I mean, I love to just go and train hard. And I'm so sort of taking all the principles of fortitude training, the stuff kind of figured out, frequency, autoregulation being the main things that I've been doing, basically full body. It's actually the last couple of weeks, it's been full body on like Monday and Wednesday twice a week, and then lower upper. So for a third training session for everything. And I'm just mixing it up. I'm doing some what you could call like loading sets on some of those days. I've actually done some dog crap style rest pause sets.
Nice.
I'm doing muscle rounds in some cases. sometimes some pump sets. And I'm sort of blending it all together and basically eating. And I'm just getting, you know, carbs from nuts and nut butters on non-training days. And then, you know, post-workout, you know, sushi or cereal or, you know, carbs, just a nutrient timing approach. And just I'm not like really holding back. When I drop my carbs, my diet, my appetite gets really low. I actually have to be careful.
Really?
Sometimes, yeah, like the minimal carb intake, especially when I'm dieting down. If I like really, you know, keep the nut butters out and all the carbs, I will have like almost no appetite. Like I could go on, sometimes I could go on like 1,000 or 1,200 calories a day. So that makes it really easy to kind of keep the food under control. So I've just been eating really according to my appetite and just slowly for the most part. But of course, I've got this macronutrient manipulation that's in place. And slowly but surely, I mean, I think I'm up a couple more pounds since the last time, and I'm staying, you know, decently lean.
Nice.
So I'm pretty happy. Yeah, I'm just having fucking fun, man. I'm like, but for me, it's kind of funny. The thing I sort of know is, like, once I get in the gym, if I just sort of say, do whatever you want, it's going to be something stupid, you know? It's literally going to be something stupid, like, I mean, I'll just be honest. Like, one of the things I've been messing around with Smith squats, with my top squat, because I'm really like going deep. And so on those, I can really get some good squat depth. And I haven't like been going like really ass to ankles on squats, because on barbell squats, it just doesn't work, as I think I mentioned last time.
But, yeah.
Never has really totally felt right. You know, despite how much I increase my ankle flexibility, what have you, just, it feels okay. I can do the exercise. It just becomes a glute low back issue for me. That's, you know, if I were a power lifter, I'd be like, you know, wide stance, low bar guy. That's where I drive my power. But I'm not trying to squat for my glutes per se. But so I do stuff like, you know, warm up, you know, and then get to like a heavy, like do like a couple loading sets, three loading sets with, you know, 2 minutes rest a la fortitude training. Okay. But on the third one, I just do a drop set and drop it, like go like four plates, three plates, or sometimes it's like four plates, three and a half plates, three plates, then two plates, for like a four stage drop set, which is just fucking brutal. Like, but it's just like the fucking annihilation. But it's like, but it's fun. Like that's, even when I'm not, that's what I like to do. I just like to go in there and be a knucklehead. And it's, so it's kind of like, it's just let the, and I hold myself back. You know, the next day I wouldn't do squats, of course.
Yeah.
I might do a leg press, something like that. And that might just be like one, you know, muscle round, after maybe some knee extensions and hamstring curls just to warm up.
Yeah.
So the next day I'd pay attention, you know, but on those days when I feel good, I let loose. So it's been like auto regulation with less structure. Aside from the training frequency and the diet, and you can kind of, I'm giving myself a gift in exploiting the fact that after a show, you can kind of do what you want.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you know, keep your food under control, you're going to regain some size, and, you know, there'll be some rebound. And if you control it, you know, appropriately, as we've mentioned quite a few times here, you know, you're going to make some decent progress. So I'm combining that, and I'm just sort of riding that physiological phenomenon out and having some fun with it. you know, I'm hooting and hollering as I'm riding the train.
That's cool. So, that's cool because you're able to connect with you know, what you love about the sport to begin with.
That's what kind of what it was. I needed to go back and just like, you know, hey, I just love to try. I think about when I was playing football in high school, and the head coach, I think he wanted to talk. He was inviting some guys out to play junior varsity who were like sophomores. There was just a few guys, and he was basically just looking for the guys who were working the hardest, you know, not necessarily the best players, because I wasn't the best player by far, but I was always in there working really hard. And the head coach was there in the weight room, and he calling people over. And I, you know, you could see that he's doing that. You know, he's sitting down and talking to him, and you know what you're talking about exactly. But I remember sitting down in front of him, and he looks at me. He had this look like, holy fucking shit, what are you doing? Like, what are you, like, you look like you're doing something just totally different than everyone else in here. Because the other guys are kind of sitting down, like, I think I was like breathing like a locomotive. And he's like, you want a towel or something? Just sweating all over the place. And I remember that because I'm like, it was just bizarre coming, because this guy was a great coach, really well known and very successful and such an air of authority. And I'm like, I guess maybe I do. I just like, I really liked it. Just train hard. I kind of always have. So it's like since I was a kid, and it's just fun to just go in there and do that, you know?
Yeah.
Most of the time. So you're right. Just reconnecting with my passion and my love.
I love that. I've got a question for you guys. You know, I've been, increasing the frequency of my chest training, and I've been keeping a logbook and working on beating that. Nice. I think I need to back off for a minute though. I found that, you know, the reason that I started initially doing this is because I found that I couldn't withstand doing my traditional bro split chest workout that, you know, was like 5 exercises, 4 sets, because after a period of time that front my front delt area would start hurting. It's my bicep tendon. It would just get so fatigued, but and there's some tendonitis in there. So, you know, I started backing off, doing just a couple exercises and splitting that up into 2 workouts. Well, now that I've been really pushing with this thing twice a week, I'm finding that both of my front delts are really kind of aching right now. And I know I kind of tweaked something in the other bicep tendon from pressing. It's telling me, you know, I need to maybe back off here for a moment. What would you guys suggest I did this week for my chest training, when normally I do 2 exercises on one day and then 2 exercises the other day, and I go pretty much all out for about 3 sets per exercise?
What rep ranges?
Usually about 10 to 12. And if it's really bothering me, then I'll lighten it up and I'll shoot more for a 20 rep range now.
Yeah, I would just do 20s.
Just stay with 20 for the week?
Yeah.
All right.
That should sort it. Usually right. Does.
That's kind of what I was thinking, but I figured I had the opportunity to talk to both of you here, so I'd ask your opinion on the show.
I would also avoid any of those exercises that you know or suspect are causing the issue. Yeah.
Right on.
Go to something like totally different. Like, are you like doing a lot of like incline barbell Smith machine?
You know what? I can't do barbell. It's whatever the issue is with my shoulder. It's never allowed me to do barbell for years. So
yeah.
I usually, you know what too? I had gotten away from dumbbells for some time, but I've been working those back into the program, and I suspect that might be part of what the issue might be. So I might just back away from those and just use. I mean, I can work really hard with machines, and for the most part, using like the hammer strength machines. We have like a whole variety of them too, things that are, you know, independently work that you unilaterally move the weight. I've been able to grow my chest this year using predominantly these devices. So I might just back off to using just those things for the week too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm battling that right now. That's like been like story of my life type of thing, is you just like have to like stay away from the stuff that's causing the issue. So decline stuff you can probably do more of.
Absolutely.
I'm guessing. Yeah. So I would try some decline stuff, and like even try like if you have like one of those like a seated cable fly machine, or you can rig one up with the cross cable and putting a bench between, and you can find a nice sweet angle that is sort of a decline or a flat.
Yeah.
And externally rotate at the shoulder, which means your kind of palms will be up. Mm. And that'll be like kind of driving your pinkies together. You'll tend to feel that in the more in the lower chest. And that sometimes will release that. You can kind of, sometimes on like the first couple reps, you try something and like you like a little tweak there. And then like you figure out a way to do the motion without the issue. But sometimes that is like can be your only clue that particular exercise might be an irritating one.
Yeah.
But I would do those. And then have you ever done the old classic broomstick stretch?
I do. You know what? I use a band. Are you talking about right. when you put your hands over your head type thing and behind your back?
Yeah. Bilateral circumduction. Yeah. Are you doing those now?
I do. Yeah. Usually I bring a band with me, something that's heavy enough that I can get a deeper stretch with it, but not so heavy that I strain myself with it. And I'll usually warm up doing those on my first exercise.
How many reps do you do backwards and forwards?
Usually about maybe 10, 15 as I'm warming up, you know, and as I warm up, I do, you know, I mean, I probably warm up for 10, 15 minutes. So I probably end up doing, I'd say probably 6 or 7 of those sets just to kind of move the blood in.
Are your delts just pumped to crap after you get done?
Yes.
With one?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. I'd start doing those, you know, not so much that you're starting to, you don't cause any delt issues or your delts are like chronically sore, but I start doing those on your non-training days too.
Okay.
Like every day. Yeah.
I'll work that in.
Yeah. Do you stretch your biceps out too?
A little bit, probably not enough. I probably could do that more.
Yeah. So like a good stretch on that is like find a vertical pole and grip it thumb down.
Okay.
And then like turn like you're doing a pec stretch.
Yeah.
And then if you sort of like rotate your elbow underneath, it'll pull your wrist into some pronation.
Hmm.
So the biceps is a supinator. So if you force some pronation, that will stretch it out more. So being in that pec stretch position, which is really, you're trying to find the right angle that gets your biceps.
I like that.
Yeah. And then adding the pronation and look for those little spots where like, oh yeah, that's tight as shit. And just stay there for a little while until it's not tight as shit.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for the suggestion.
I got more, man. I'll take up the whole show, but like that, I've got so many ways to work around that stuff that it's kind of silly. So
we have at one of my gyms, a free motion. It you could use it. A lot of people use it as a fly. Machine. Do you know the machine I'm talking about? It's run by cables.
That's the one I was thinking of. Okay. That should be a good choice for you.
That's like my bread and butter as far as I use that for presses a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I get, that's the main thing when I could do nothing else with presses. That was the one machine that worked so well.
That's why I mentioned that one. Yeah. That's one of mine too, that I can, cause you can go out wider to make it a fly. You can come in closer to make it more of a press.
Yeah.
It gives you a lot of flex. You can go up high if you want to make an incline, go down low if you want to make it a decline.
You ever, one thing I've noticed about that, and I wonder if this is part of the reason that it works, the pressure, I mean, the pulleys are much further out than my elbows are. So the weight isn't only coming straight down, it's kind of coming down and away from you, if that makes sense.
Is this the one where you're seated upright?
Yes.
And okay, so the weight's kind of pulling back, not so much down. Okay, so say that again.
Yeah, so I guess I was saying down, thinking of, you know, if you were laying on a bench. But yeah, you're sitting upright. So the weight's not just coming back toward you. It's also being pulled away from you.
Because
And I wonder if that has something to do with taking the tension off of that bicep tendon.
It definitely, the angle of pull is going to change, you know, the activation that you have to use to actually do a movement. And it's changing the biomechanics, everything. Of course. That's why you've seen people do. It's a little bit overkill, but you've seen people that get in a cross cable and they will hook up. They'll use dumbbells, and they've also hooked up the cross cable to the dumbbells.
I've never seen this.
Yeah, there are a few videos out there where people will do that. It's kind of like they want to create that outward pull, which is what you get more from a fly.
Yeah.
And add that to the downward pull, or the back pull that you're getting from the dumbbells, simply do the pull of gravity. So yeah, that outward pull resists a horizontal adduction, which is what the pecs are doing. So yeah, having a way out like that wide is why that machine feels so good. Is that, you know, it's creating tension like right from the get go in the pulling you into horizontal abduction. Whereas you don't get that with dumbbells if you're lying on a bench, for instance.
Thinking of that movement using the dumbbells hooked to the cables, I imagine somebody doing that at Strength Asylum, and I imagine the look on Jordan's face. Very displeased.
We used to have one of those machines that you just described, but Andy recently got rid of it. I used to like doing flies on it. I wasn't a fan of pressing on it personally. I prefer to get my elbows more behind the press.
Yeah.
I'm more of a tricep presser when I press, so that machine for me is not really much use for me as a press. But as a flyer, I really, really liked it. So that was kind of annoying. I don't even know why. I came in one day and it was gone. I was like, oh, fair enough.
You get something to replace it with, maybe?
He's always chucking new kit in, so there would have been something else in there, but not specifically kind of the same.
Right. That's a great machine. You can also, if you haven't, people put a Bosu ball on that.
Huh.
Scott? Yeah. And the one at the gym where I use that most regularly is they've got soldered, or, you know, you can't take the handles off. Like, you can't adjust the handles. So it makes this a bit of a pain because the Bosu ball behind you, like, puts you forward so much, it's kind of hard to get in there with the heavy weight.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, but if you can take the handles off, so you're, you know, at a starting position that doesn't, you know, risk injury, just getting the weight into position.
Yeah.
Like that, a Bosu ball, it creates some arch, it pulls your scapulae back.
Oh, I could see that.
Or just, you know, putting like the bar pad, the bar tampon.
Yeah.
Or even like a foam roller behind your back.
Huh.
Vertically will create, if you haven't done this before, you'd be like, holy shit. I had a guy that I mentioned this, I think, on my board, and for 3 months, like every 3 weeks, he was thanking me because he loved doing it. He was doing it on everything, and it made his chest grow really, really well. He was so happy. Just forcing that scapular retraction sort of with the implement, really puts the load onto the pec muscles.
I could see that. I never thought of doing that before, ever.
Oh yeah, you'll like it. The Bosu ball can be a little too much.
Yeah,
but actually, you can feel it. You can't use much weight too. So, but just to add any of those three things I mentioned, works pretty well.
All right, I'll check it out. You guys cool. Want to get to a commercial break here and come back and answer some questions?
Yeah.
All right, guys, we will be right back. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at fortitudetraining.net. And if you order any of his products or services, you get a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. And if you want to get more hands-on, come on out to Tucson, Arizona on September 9th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. There will be a Fortitude Training Camp with Dr. Scott. Cutting-edge bodybuilding science, lecture, Q&A, plus hands-on training. Also, on October 21st, come out to see the NPC Florida Clash of Champions, co-promoted by Dr. Scott, and featuring some great guest posing with IFBB Dave Henry and Guy Cisternino. Go to fortitudetraining.net to learn more about all these products, services, and events offered by Scott Stevenson. Muscle Minds is made possible in part by Jordan Peters. If you've enjoyed listening to Jordan today on Muscle Minds, check out his website, trainedbyjp.com. The site offers over 50 hours of video content, covering everything from the most basic approach to training and nutrition for beginners, all the way through advanced anabolic and insulin strategies for seasoned competitors, and have questions answered daily on their forum sections. So check out trainedbyjp.com. And hey, on October 8th, come on out to the JP Grand Prix with a 20,000-pound prize fund, IFBB Dave Henry guest posing, and Jordan Peters running the show. This promises to be an awesome event. Learn more at jpgrandprix.co.uk. All right, guys, and welcome back to Muscle Minds. Jordan Peters and Dr. Scott Stevenson, and I am Scott McNally. So we are starting up with our questions at the thread. If you go over to Advices Radio and click on the forums, you can select the Muscle Minds thread in the bodybuilding section. And from there, you can submit questions to ask on the show. Today, we are starting with this one. A question for Dr. Scott and Jordan. I will be starting my master's in nutrition and human performance from Logan University. He asks if we have any thoughts on that school, first of all. And from there, he says, the focus of my degree will be trying to apply what I learn to the sport of bodybuilding and hypertrophy. Any advice on choosing classes, what to focus on? And also, he wants to know your thoughts on writing a good thesis paper. And from there, he's wondering if you guys have any recommendations for PhDs. And what do you feel are the, so a lot of questions here, last one, what do you feel are the major benefits of getting your master's and PhDs? Has it helped with your bodybuilding knowledge, or is experience still king? So all the way back to the beginning there, Logan University, are you familiar with this school, Scott?
It's in it's in the St. Louis area.
Okay.
So it's a little school. I don't know much about it. I went and looked here again. You know, its rating, but, you know, even I actually sort of have one answer to address most of his questions. Mm. So yeah, he's asking about choosing classes, the quality of the school, applying things to the sport of bodybuilding, hypertrophy. So here's the short and sweet of it. I totally understand his perspective, really quite a bit. And the interesting thing is that you're going to have very few classes that are going to be directed to bodybuilding hypertrophy. Mm. Just that's the nature of it. In most cases, and with one exception I'm getting at, the school is not going to matter per se so much. Logan University doesn't stand, there's going to be some limitations because it's not a major research institution. So that's going to impact, you know, going on to get a PhD, recommendations for schools for PhDs. So the centerpiece for this sort of, a trajectory, if he's wanting to get a PhD, is going to be finding a mentor, someone on the faculty there who has interests that match his. Mm. So, for instance, just popped into my head, Mike Stone is one of the sort of founding fathers of the NSCA. And there's I doubt he's listening, but there's a student who's actually a student of mine. He's was a buddy of mine here in town before that, still is, who has gone on to get his PhD. And, Mike Stone is someone who has interest in muscle growth and strength and conditioning and et cetera, things that match the interest of this particular student. So he went to study with him. And for the longest time, he's not there anymore, but Mike Stone was at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina, which you don't think of like as a major juggernaut at all. Like David Kostel, who's like one of the greatest exercise physiologists of all time, was at Ball State University in Indiana. Which doesn't stand out as like a Stanford, or it's not a major state university. It's a great, now because of him, it's a great place to go to study exercise physiology. Not necessarily bodybuilding types of things per se, but so it's that mentor, that person that would have those interests. That is the type of person who might be teaching, have a seminar or a class where instead of talking about adaptations to endurance exercise training and, you know, training in the heat and that sort of thing, he might have a, you know, specialized sections about bodybuilding. And that would be the person who would be interested in doing a thesis project in line with muscle growth or bodybuilding related interests. Hmm. That mentor is really kind of everything, you know, for finding a program that matches your interests. And the mentor, and in part the school, is going to determine how well you're going to be able to position yourself to get into a good PhD program, presuming that you're wanting to go and do research or at least get, you know, well-trained as a research, as a scientific researcher in area of exercise physiology and muscle growth and protein metabolism, what have you. Hmm. So, like, if you find someone who, you know, who isn't doing any research, really, and none of the stuff that you would do as a thesis project is going to be funded or published, which happens at a lot of programs, that doesn't exactly put you in the in a great starting position for trying to interview with other mentors at PhD programs who would bring you in. So it's really the person that you'd work under more so than the university or even the program per se. It's great to have a program that may even have a track. If you've got two or three people there that are involved in the bodybuilding or the fitness world in some way, then that's phenomenal. That's even better. Then you got cross lab collaboration that's going on. But the school, like, all he's asking sort of in a way all the wrong questions. The school and the classes and those sorts of things don't really matter. You can have a diamond in the rough as a mentor, teaching at Podunk University in whatever state, and that person could be doing really good stuff and be very well connected, like someone like Mike Stone is. This person is actually doing his PhD with Mike Stone, but then that's a phenomenal launching pad for moving forward, because you're going to conferences. You want somebody who's going to those conferences, who's involved in the scientific community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's really where it's at. So my guess is he's already starting. Let's see. He's probably starting in the fall, so maybe a little late for this. You can always transfer. I did that. I started in Colorado Springs and then took some classes up in CU Boulder, then ended up doing my master's degree in Texas, because I wanted to get what I wanted to get, and I wasn't willing to settle for less. So I ended up having to move around a good bit before I finally landed where I ended up finishing my master's degree. And I went somewhere else for my PhD because I put a, I was like, I don't care if you put me on the moon. If that's where the best place to learn this stuff is, then give me my space shuttle and I'll go. So that's the first thing. And then benefits of getting your master's and PhDs. For me, it's been really kind of a life quality, because it opens up so many worlds of inquiry and understanding. It sort of gave me the tools to it's kind of like, if someone wanted to go and, be able to be an archaeologist and they need like equipment so they can dig into the ground and, and picks and brushes so they can, finally sift through whatever ruins they may have come across, and they need to have a camera to take pictures and some way to document things and, access the internet to look things up, blah, blah. Those are kind of the tools of the trade. And having my graduate degree, the education that came with this and the understanding that I gather along the way have been the tools of the trade of learning how to learn, and then being forced to learn some things that I wouldn't have otherwise, that have been able to make me a good sort of, and really kind of, I am an archaeologist in a way, that I'm just digging out information from the body of literature. So it's kind of like, rather than being like sort of sitting there thinking, God, I bet there's all sorts of cool stuff if I could dig the ground up, I'm someone who knows how to go in there and do the digging and write, and I think at least, write the articles and put the piece of things together that I can. So those intellectual tools that came from my graduate degree are that I still build upon and add to, and I try to keep building my toolkit every time I I go and do another dig, so to speak.
I know.
Are things that just improve my quality of life. I can help other people, and an example that I made note of here is like how I do peak week with manipulating carbohydrate and water. And there are a couple articles on John Meadows' site about glycogen carbing up, the carb up a peak week, and the whole peak week thing. I figured a lot of that all out because of an understanding of physiology and, of course, an interest in bodybuilding. And I would have been able to explain that in the way that I have, and even figured out the way that I did, I don't think, at least in the time frame that I did, were it not for my graduate training, because I could understand things in a way that I wouldn't have been able to otherwise. So, like, that's a practical hands. It's like, wow, having this bookworm knowledge has allowed me to have a way to pique people that doesn't really require pharmaceutical diuretics when, 90% of people are still using those.
Sure.
So, like, that's pretty cool, I'm pretty happy with that. So that's a quality of life for myself and others. I'm not risking people's health unnecessarily, because they know there's another way, and that came from graduate training. So there's my shortest answer.
Nice. I know we lost you for a second there, Jordan. Did you catch this question?
Yeah. So obviously Scott's covered most of that. I mean, the situation that I just went through with my master's was somewhat similar in regards to trying to relate things specifically to what I'm interested in. Hmm. And to be honest, I just kind of took every opportunity I could through every lecture to pull onto topics that I wanted to talk about.
Hmm.
Luckily, the lecturers were really cool with it because I used to derail the lectures all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have got really pissed off at me, to be honest. But they knew, no offense to the rest of the guys and the girls in my class, but they were fresh out of undergrad. They were 21 years old. They had no idea why they were even there. They just moved on to masters because they felt like they should.
Yep.
I was the only one in the room that was like, I want to fucking understand this and this alone.
Hmm.
Like, so when they realized that my passion for this is greater than everyone else in the room combined together, that they were responsive to that.
That's cool.
Which was cool. So if you get a scenario like that, which you could well do, like, I don't know how fresh you are out of undergrad or just how deep your passion lies with this, but if you can at least demonstrate that, and that you can demonstrate that you've gone above and beyond with your own reading and you know like a lot of cool stuff, then they're going to respond to you pretty well. That's kind of my best advice when it comes to that. Try to at least take from it what you can when the opportunities arise.
Nice. Mm. All right, I'll move on to the next question here, and this is from Dreamweaver. He says, I've recently started fortitude training, and I'm loving the change. The problem I'm having right now is that about 3/4 of the way through the workout, I am getting much too gassed, more so on the load and pump days than the muscle round days. And I'm also extremely sore. Would you recommend for better energy in the gym and to aid in recovery to push more carbs into my intra-workout drink? I follow a carb back loading style diet. Carbs are only pre-workout, intra-workout, and 2 post-workout meals. Currently, I'm taking about 25 carbs with my pre and intra from Granite Sups. I am 26 years old, 6'1", 208 pounds. Basically, I'm curious to the size of an intra workout that you think would be optimal and what may be overkill.
Did he say what tier he was trading on?
I don't think he mentions it.
I might need addressing. He might need to pull back a tier. If he's really feeling that gassed out, then it may well be that he's just able to train at fairly high intensities and he doesn't need to sustain that for a whole higher tier training session. So pulling back from maybe tier 3 to tier 2 would be prudent. What do you think, Scott?
That was the first thing that occurred to me. You know, he's just trying to do too much. The other thing that I'm reading too much into this, but he mentioned that his diet was a carb backloading style diet.
Yeah.
Which basically what he outlines there is like one of the main dietary versions that I have in fortitude training in the book.
Okay.
But he calls it carb backloading. And he doesn't refer to what I have in the book. It makes me wonder if it would be to his advantage to go and reread the book and look again at the book, because he doesn't seem like he's auto-regulating, meaning he's not dropping down a volume tier. And also that question about the intra-workout, you know, optimal is, you know, going to vary for everyone.
Yeah.
But I also would address that with sort of ranges of the protein and carb components and other bells and whistles that could go into an intra-workout drink in the book too. So this is all like stuff that's in the book. It's one of those advantages of me having written the book the way I did, is like I anticipated a lot of these kinds of questions.
So
one of the ways just to like start with a intra workout, especially if he's like dragging along like that, he may not need to do this if he drops down a volume tier and his workouts are a little bit shorter, is, you know, just consider that one of your meals. So if he's got, you know, if he's taking in 500 calories, you know, for 6 times a day to get 3,000 calories. What does he say here? Doesn't even give his
He doesn't give
his dietary breakdown. No, yeah. But let's say that's the case, then you know he might shoot for roughly a 500 calorie interworkout. And if that's too much in terms of his digestion, then he could start smaller. He'll adapt to that more than likely and work his way up. And he could also consider, you don't have to get all fancy, but if he's trying to do like dextrose and whey concentrate, that's probably not the best choice for an intra. He may need to go a little bit fancier, but he doesn't necessarily have to go with highly ran cyclic dextrins and PeptoPro. It doesn't have to be a $1 million intra workout. And where his meals are before and afterwards could be somewhat important too. So that he could, you can have a meal a little bit closer to your intra workout or to your workout and then have a smaller intra workout. There's also something called a perceived recovery status that I can, if he messages me, I can send that chart to him that he can kind of use to sort of figure out if he's trying to do too much, if he's running his blast too long, if his volume tier is too high. So mainly this is an auto-regulation. It's sort of like the auto-regulation is almost, in a certain way, it's kind of like, you give someone some Neapolitan ice cream and say, do you like that? And they're like, I don't know, should I? Like, well, I mean, do you like it or not? It's like either you like chocolate or you don't like chocolate. Either you like, strawberry or you don't like strawberry. Which is your favorite? So ultimately the answer comes down to what you think is right. So and then there's all the other bits and pieces, like how well is he sleeping? What else is going on during his day? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So sleep's super important for recovery. I'm like, that's on the top of my list right now, is getting enough sleep. So some people like saunas. They help them relax. That can be a great way. There's actually some dating, get rid of some toxins just with saunas. So just the nature of his diet otherwise, he doesn't really give us a whole lot to, it's sort of a first things first type of deal. Like let's see if you got all your bases covered before we start working on the, adding icing to the cake. Do you have a good cake first and foremost? But dropping the volume tier down, making his intra a little bit larger, but not so large that it's impairing his training. Considering whether he's blasting too long, and then making sure all the bits and pieces of his lifestyle and diet are in place are the things I would look at first. And reread the book. I think what he may be like another read through might be really helpful. Or if he's on my, I mention people this to people all the time, but they seem to forget is that if you bought my book, all you have to do is register on my site and send me your transaction ID in private message on the board, not Facebook or Instagram, please. Instagram I always never check, but just on the board, and I'll get on there every once in a while. I drop the ball and miss it, but I'll get you full. You get a full subscription to the board, and there's just a mother load of fortitude training related Q&A on there that answers pretty much everything. So, and that's free if you bought the book, like literally lifetime, Q&A with me. People ask all sorts of stuff too, not just fortitude relating. So I just answer people's questions as a way to give back to folks who have picked up my book. So he can get some answers there just by searching.
Right on. He's got another question directed at Jordan. He says, in a video on your site, Corin said that you two are now implementing an arm delt day. This is
way old.
Yeah. This is so, but
it's really old. Yeah.
We implemented that for like a fucking week, realized it was shit.
All right.
The other guy already has his PhD too, by the way. Yeah. For that question.
He said he was starting it in summer, so he's probably in that now. Yeah.
But that was like summer of 2007. Like he's probably already an associate professor someplace. Anyway.
All right. Moving on. Funny. He says, the next guy says, question for Dr. Scott. What are your thoughts on TB500 and BPC157 potential for causing or speeding up cancer?
Okay. So yeah, there's always a potential there. I mean, you can find a link to so many things that might or could cause cancer. So TB500, it's supposedly the active fraction of something called thymosin beta 4, which stimulates tissue repair and angiogenesis. It actually turns on stem cell maturation, and it has some, of course, anti-inflammatory actions. So it does all sorts of things to promote cell survival and prevent cell death. And that's sort of like, that's the hallmark feature of what cancer cells are. They're basically immortal. They don't want to die. They don't turn over when normal cells would. So yeah, there's some potential there. And BPC, the thing about BPC-157 that's kind of interesting, it's a really fascinating compound. It's been coming up a lot lately in conversation with folks, and I want to stay on top of the research, see what they how they figure out how this stuff works, because it's a gastric drive peptide. I don't know if people remember that, but it's so it's found in the it's produced in the gastrointestinal system. It makes me wonder if its regenerative properties are there. It's also orally bioavailable.
Really?
So you can get you won't be delivering it for a elevated tissue concentration as you would if you injected it near a site of injury, but it'll still get in your system if you just drink it.
Weird.
Consume it, orally. Well, it's found in the gastrointestinal system.
Huh.
So that's why, it does seem weird. It's like, you think it'd be broken down, but there are small peptides that can make their way into the bloodstream in all sorts of ways. So all sorts of instances of this. So I wonder if this stuff is not produced to help repair whatever tissue degeneration comes about from the naturally sort of caustic, acidic, and enzyme-riddled environment of the gastrointestinal tract. You've got literally enzymes there that are designed to break down food, and food is very often of an animal source. Like, literally, why aren't you breaking down your own GI? There are various reasons for that, but I wonder if the BPC-157 is something that is sort of like involved as a kind of a cleanup protein, a regenerative restorative protein for the gastrointestinal system. And it also, has effects elsewhere. So that's just like kind of an aside on BPC-157 that I've been thinking about. It's like, why does this stuff work? Like, what's its real function other than, fixing the rotator cuff on rats and helping Jordan's tricep tendons,
Yeah.
But, it does, elevate, growth hormone receptor concentration. There's not a whole lot of evidence that growth hormone would cause cancer. I think people with acromegaly have an increased risk of colon cancer. So, but you've got the association there with growth hormone receptors and whatever cancer might be brought about from amplifying the action of growth hormone as well. So the short answer is, there's potential, but I have no idea how to quantify that. It's just like on paper, theoretically.
I see. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's a good question though.
Yeah, it's very popular. Like you said, I've been hearing a lot about it. I have some on hand, and I plan to start using it for the shoulders, like I was talking about. Yeah.
Right. Of course.
Next question. This is something we covered this just slightly. This is back when we were talking a while ago about Jordan training in his bare feet. This is from Guru Hansa, and he says, I'd love to hear you guys talk about training barefoot. Jordan does it, and I think that both Scotts don't. Would Scott and Scott give it a shot or not? Also, what are the benefits that Jordan thinks that he gets from training in his bare feet? Compared to training, with shoes on. And if I recall, Jordan, you had said that you get a better just connection to the ground, right?
I don't know why people go on about this so much. Like, it's not even a thing. Like, no joke, 50% of it is I can't be fucked with shoes on. That's 50% of it. Like, in all seriousness, like the bending down and putting physically on the shoe, I can't be bothered to do. The other 50% is it's comfortable.
Yeah,
because I spend all day without shoes on, so I'm used to not having shoes on because I work at home and I never wear shoes.
Yeah.
So then if I'm used to that, I just carry on doing what I'm used to. Every fucking Instagram post I put up, why are you training barefoot? And
I thought, I know.
As I get closer to my show and I get more and more grumpy, I'm going to just turn around and just fucking roar at someone if they ask me. what difference does it make? If you want to train barefoot, fucking do it. Who cares? Like, you want to train with a pink bandana on, whatever, fucking do it. It doesn't make a difference. be more attentive to the exercise that you're doing and how you're doing it.
Yeah.
As to what I've got on my feet or what I don't.
I love it.
Oh man.
Well, here's the question: is like, why isn't everyone? I mean, did humans evolve with Nike swoosh signs on the side? Just do it on the side of our feet? No. Barefoot is the way our bodies evolved. You know, it's like it'd be like asking like someone why aren't you wearing gloves on your hands when you train? It's like, you know, it's the same thing, really.
Wear gloves if you want to wear gloves. Don't wear gloves if you don't want to wear gloves.
Exactly. I mean, we're supposed to be barefoot. I mean, literally, we've just civilized ourselves and we've accustomed our feet to wearing shoes all the time.
That's true.
The barefoot running craze, you know, I think the issue is that after a lifetime of not wearing shoes, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you haven't casted an arm, you know, most of the time, it's just you lose that ability to fully adjust to that after, you know, decades of not being barefoot. But yeah, that's I love your response, Jordan. That's awesome.
Me too.
Totally true. They talked about it on the Size Game podcast too, the last
one. Oh yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually what they said too. We're talking about, but he's too busy to listen in probably, so we can just keep on talking about him.
I picked up these shoes from New Balance. They're called Minimus, and they're like the barefoot running shoes.
Yeah,
I like having a shoe on my foot because I like being able to grip the floor with the rubber sole of the shoe. But I hate except for with squats, having any type of elevation or any type of cushion, anything that kind of sinks, you know, when you're trying to lift. Running shoes, I think for me, are personally terrible, but I'm really enjoying these shoes because they're so low to the ground. They almost mimic that barefoot thing, but I don't have to retrain my feet to walk out. See, here's my problem is that I wouldn't be able to walk into the gym through the parking lot because I'd be like stepping on little tiny stones. My feet are too sensitive for all that right now.
That's why you wear flip-flops.
Ah,
there you go.
All right, I'll move on because I remember we talked about this before, and Scott, you talked about you have like they're basically like a pair of combat boots almost.
Yeah, I have like they're $35 boots. You know, they're like nothing. You know, that's not like a $200 pair of shoes. But the only thing I ever noticed really that was sort of kind of important for footwear is when I've in the past I've gotten really strong on training my calves.
Yeah.
And I would really, I mean, like, you know, I think I mentioned this too last time. I felt like I was destroying the underside of my feet.
Mm.
And that's not because your feet aren't designed, you know, for that type of loading, you know, that's just kind of too much for me at least. And that was just, you know, I could have backed off or done something different. This is when I was doing a lot of DC style calf training. So, but I like those boots. Yeah. They're cheap and, yeah, it's just like a no-brainer. I don't have to worry about, because it's the thing with shoes, dude. Is like I really think this is a whole other topic, but for the reason I just, you know, we were just talking about with Jordan and the way nature designed us, like the shoe thing is just a crazy. It's like I almost want to call it a racket. I'm not going to call it a racket, but it's pretty freaking close.
Yeah,
because you can never get the same shoes every year. They're always changing the styles. It's just like
that's true.
It just increased. Like I need new. It's like. Like really, when you find some shoes that work for you, if like the shoes actually like and the design and the underlying philosophy, like what do we need? Do we need air? Do we need forefoot cushioning? Do we need rear foot cushioning? Pronation, supination, blah, blah, blah. I mean, of course, there are all sorts of people with, you know, who have a need for a podiatrist and a lift and those sorts of things. So there is there's something, you know, medical to this, I think, that I'm not throwing into the garbage pail.
All right. Yeah. I remember Dave Palumbo used to always talk about orthotics, and he suggested that everybody he worked with got orthotics and that it would fix your foot perfectly for like the perfect squat, basically, is what he had said.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you have a leg length discrepancy, and you know, a lot of the things we do in the gym are not sort of natural, they're unnatural actions, I like to say. So, you know, there's some reason, you know, for that. Like we're wearing belts,
yeah,
you know, we're using straps. You might want orthotics. You might need boots for heavy calf presses. You might, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Those are sort of training aids. But if you look at sort of like the whole footwear industry, like the sports footwear industry, it doesn't seem like there's not this continuous, there's at least from what I've seen, there's not like a, a standard theme is like, this is really what the foot needs. And like, yeah. there's no convergence on like some central dogma of what it is that makes for a good athletic shoe.
That's
a great point. Yeah. It's all like, over the place.
It's like the next gimmick is what it is.
It is. Yeah. Do we need more padding? Do we need no padding?
Yeah.
You save yourself a ton of money if you stop wearing shoes.
This is true too. Yeah.
You will.
I put buying shoes in the same category as buying birthday and Christmas cards. And same as buying wrapping paper. I think that's all a fucking racket. It's all the same. Yeah. I don't do any of that shit.
Yeah. It is a cultural thing, really. I mean, it's a human being thing, but you're right. Yeah.
Hmm.
Like, no joke. Like, Corin finds it pretty funny now. But like, I will literally write Merry Christmas on a scrap of paper and hand it to her. I do it now as a joke. Yeah. I don't believe at all in buying cards. I think it's really weird.
Uh-huh.
You buy a card and you spend money on it, and then it goes in a drawer, it goes in the bin.
Yeah.
I find that really, and I won't wrap a present because I won't wrapping paper. That makes no sense to me at all. I'll just hand it to her in the bag that I got it in.
yeah. I mean, these are like remnants. See, we have built in our. We're going to get off topic, but fuck it.
It's good. It's good stuff.
These are like remnants of the human tendency to follow tradition and yeah. create, and create sort of ritual.
Yeah.
And when it's associated with meaning, like things that are that really. You know, are deeply connected to your purpose and your communication, then it's important, you know, but when you just sort of like mindlessly wrap, or like when you get, here's my favorite, Jordan, is when you really get, you have them wrap it for you at the store. Oh, like yeah. you buy something, it's like, ooh, there's a lot of personal care that went into that one, you know, like some nameless person wraps it for you so you can unwrap it. It's not like the idea of the wrapping would be, look what I did. I took special time out of my day, and I crafted you something that I thought was specific to the nature of the interaction, the love and the care that we have for one another. I'm giving this to you because I know you and you know me, and this is how much I love you.
And the card is the same thing. You know, the card is the same thing. Yeah, the card is generic. This is my heartfelt message to you that somebody else wrote and 1,000 other people have given to their significant other.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But it still touches us. It still touches us. They can still get us because it's hardwired into us to want to seek out that intimacy and those sort of messages. So you read a really nice card, it brings a tear to your eye and it seems to fit the situation, but we're missing out on the process of generating that intimate message of like sitting down and saying, why do I care about so-and-so? I care about that's a real fucking card. Hmm. You know, you write them a letter.
Yes.
As opposed to you buy a letter.
You just write something on a piece of paper. That to me, one year I made an effort to like, I can't draw for shit. Like, my drawing is literally like a 4-year-old. It's hilarious. But I was just again to take the piss. I like drew like a Santa and like a reindeer.
Yeah.
It was so bad that it was hilarious.
Uh-huh.
And I remember giving it to her and she literally was just in fits of laughter. And like, how much does that beat buying a generic card?
Yeah. A millionfold.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I despise like the card companies.
Yeah. Yeah. But they know, you know, there's so much of our interactions and the way we behave that are sort of, you know, biological, sociological, psychological remnants of our past in societies that we're so far astray from, but we're not aware of it, you know, and yeah. cards are a great example of that, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. That is not the direction I expected things to go, but that was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, then we can get into the whole illusion of the value of money and buying, you're buying cards with an illusion, you know, because the value of money is just because there's this convention in society in the world that money, is dollar bills or what's on your credit card actually has value.
Right.
Like, are you guys familiar with Bitcoins? I'm sure you are.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like when Bitcoins first came out, you're like thinking like, what the fuck is this? I don't trust this.
Yeah.
You know, And but really, when you think about it, like dollar bills, like any form of currency, is really just something that we've sort of got this convention. We've all sort of agreed upon, you know, hey, that's hard green cash. Those are the Benjamins, you know, in the States. You know, those are pounds or whatever, sterling, whatever it may be, whatever your unit is. I trust that. I know that because everyone else does.
Yeah.
But you have to believe in that. So that's kind of the thing with cards are sort of another version of that. It's like, well, everyone give cards. And if you get cards from someone, you don't give them cards. Well, you're just an asshole, right?
like, you know,
and I have friends who like would send me cards, and I know I've seen my mom do this for years, and I'm trying to like, you know, beat up my mom here, but you know, you sit down and you have like 200 cards and you just like Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. And you send those all out, you know, and you, it's like a pain in the ass to get to the post office, and everyone's waiting in line to send up these cards. And I'd get those in the mail, and they're nice to get, and that means I was thought of. But I don't get very many of them anymore because I'm not a card guy. I'm about as good as Jordan when it comes to that.
Hmm.
I'd rather pick up the phone and talk to somebody, and that, sure, that in of itself was less personal than actually seeing someone. But yeah, there's so many of these things, like this belief in money. That's part of our. It's built into the tribal and group mentality that we have to have agreed upon notions. And if we don't, then we have chaos. We have to all sort of trust in, you know, one leader to some degree until that person is overturned. And we have to believe in, you know, in wearing shoes or buying cards or having money, or, you know, the list goes on and on. These are all conventions that we sort of mindlessly agree to continuously through the course of our day.
All right, Scott. Well, before you disrail society,
I'm sorry. before I unleash anarchy on the world,
exactly.
Our massive podcast. All right, let's back to bodybuilding. Sorry about that.
Just a couple more.
Delete that.
Oh no, it's all staying. It's all staying.
Okay. All right. Good.
Just a couple more questions. Question cool. about outer sweep on the quad. He says, "Personal favorite." He said, "What are your personal favorite exercises or cues to isolate the vastus lateralis? I personally have always seen my medial quad grow much quicker than the lateral, even after switching things up, like squat stance, and the way that I point my toes during other quad dominant exercises. It doesn't look too disproportionate currently, but the bigger my quads get, the more uneven they seem to look." Either you guys are welcome to jump in here. What are your thoughts on bringing up that outer quad?
Jordan, you want to go? I was just on my soapbox for a while.
We kind of covered this before, really, and that you're only going to get what you can out of the way you're genetically predisposed to lay down tissue, and the way which your body's going to recruit things. So it's, for me, it's just, again, staying in the same stance, getting strong, taking your body weight up. And if you repeat that process enough times, you're going to have big legs. Like, you're going to have a big sweep. Like, yeah, though it may be slightly imbalanced to other aspects, but if that's the way that you move and the way that you recruit, even with changing stance, like you've already said, it's not really much you're going to be able to do about that. It's just the way that it is. So I would just focus on trying to make your legs as big as you physically can, and then get them as lean as you physically can, and see how they look.
Right on.
It's interesting. You know, I first thing that pops in my head is how big are your legs right now? Like, you know, Dante used to harp on this. He's always a great resource for sort of thinking of things in a sane fashion. But it's like, get your legs so friggin' massive that people are just blown away by their size.
Yeah.
And then, like, you may be like that 1 in 1,000 person who's like, whoa, like, look at this. Then they'll just say, oh my God, look at the guy's teardrop. His medialis is monstrous. And his lateralis is so big, his medialis almost makes his lateralis look small.
Yeah.
That's not a bad place to be in. Yeah. And the other thing, too, is that there's been experiments with this, too, is we have this sense that people are seeing things that we see in ourselves when really no one's even noticing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people, he may be looking at his quads and he looks at him in the mirror and, you know, and they may look great, but he's thinking, oh man, my lateralis is just so teensy, and no one would ever even see that. No one, unless they're a coach that's been used to looking at legs, you know, like, hey, you could probably use some more sweep on your quads. Like, and you're seeing, you know, Big Rami's legs, you know, on Instagram all the time.
Yeah.
You have a perception that's really warped. So it's funny because I can't count the number of times over the years, literally over the decades, when, you know, you can go back and forth with questions like this. And this isn't just try to beat up on whoever asked this question, but, and finally someone says, hey, you know, well, let's post a picture. And this may be the case, may not be, but, and then their legs aren't very big at all. It's like, well, you just need more quad. Like you, like,
yeah,
this is a question for like 5 years down the road, you know, maybe if that.
Like, I still don't even, like, I have 30 inch legs. Even now at 6 weeks out, my legs just tipped under the 30 inch mark.
Nice.
And the skin on them is thin. And I don't think at all about size of my lateralis or my medialis. I don't give a fuck. Mm. I just think about how do I get my legs to 32 inches? That's all I think about.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, no one is going to fucking care if you've got 32 inch legs.
Yeah.
No.
No one is going to care.
Yeah. Look at, like Tom Platz is actually a good example, greatest legs ever. And if you look at him, if you look closely, and we pointed this out, is especially from the front, he's got these massive adductors add, you know. So no one's ever said, like, I can't imagine Tom Platz, you know, at that stage development saying, you know, my adductors keep on outgrowing my quads. What can I do to make my quads bigger? You know, it's kind of like he just made everything so friggin' ridiculously large that it's just like, that's the least of your problems. You know, you've just got, you know, got crazy, crazy, crazy thighs. So he might, I mean, just to sort of play in line with this, thing that popped to me, I do like the somersault squats that Joe Daniels sort of invented. That's a nice option. I know it's probably not Jordan's favorite because it's a, you know, a finagled use of the Smith machine, but those work pretty nicely. You can, like, that's one of those things you can actually feel that, and, you know, you will get typically more lateralis activation with your, when your feet are close together, on a leg press or that sort of thing. And, you know, when you've got external rotation and, like, you know, knees pointed out, you want your knees generally to fall in line with your feet too. You don't want, you know, varus or valgus stresses, like, you know, your knees knocking together or flaring outward when you're driving on a leg press or a squat or something like that. So, you know, whatever your feet are, you know, don't have any crazy abduction or adduction at your knee. But so feet close together, pointed straight ahead, tend to hit the lateralis a little bit more. And you can see that through MRI measurements. Paratesh has a book called Muscle Meets Magnet, where you can actually see the activation and an imaging that was done with an MRI. So there's something there, but, like, that's just icing. Well, what's the cake, like we said before?
I have to admit, I did something similar. I had a similar question to this. I asked Shelby, him and I started training together about 4 years ago, Shelby Starnes, and I said, you know, I looked at my pictures and I said, Shelby, I think that my back is getting thicker, you know, in the last year or so, but it's not getting wider. What do you think I should focus on in my back? And his response was, all of it. You just need more back. Just keep growing all of it. Exactly what you guys are saying. And that's kind of what I did, was I stopped thinking about trying to bring up anything in particular with it. I just need more, period.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes there are these rare, I'm trying to, like, figure out why we have this mentality. Some of the reasons I think, you know, that I mentioned before still apply, but sometimes you'll see people that are just like, they just picked out each and every, they selected the perfect set of genes. They're just, like, beautifully symmetrical, and they just have really nice lines. And even when they're small, they look really balanced and just brilliant. And you can see, wow, if that person just, you know, took that physique and made it a lot larger, it would just be mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't, there are people that are just, like, they're just so pretty, their physique is just so exquisite that even when they're small, it looks really, really cool. But that's like a pie in the sky. I think it's really sort of a pie in the sky thing that people are shooting for, is that somehow I can get that sort of, like, ooh, that wow factor with a smaller physique. And I don't really think it's there to be had, not in this way. It's, you know, it's like, this is another, you know, another version of, like, how can I make my arms bigger, but I don't want to gain any weight. It's like, well, you can get a little bit, but, you know, that when you first start training, but other than that, that's it, you know? So I saw a thing, just as a side, I saw a thing on the internet, there's a, a device that I think is for real. What was the link? A buddy, a Facebook friend, he's a buddy here in town too, posted this. It's a device that it's like, it looks like an elbow brace. It's got it wraps around your forearm and your upper arm, and it's got some joints in there that provide a little resistance throughout the course of the day. So you wear this thing during the day to resist, you know, elbow flexion and extension. Like, so you don't have to exercise. You just wear this around your arm, and it creates a little bit of resistance when you, you know, drink your coffee in the morning and, you know, get up from your chair sort of thing. You wear it all day long to make your arms bigger. Hmm. It was like, holy crap. What lengths will we go to find the easiest way to put on muscle and look different ways? I'll send it to you, Scott. It was just like, I laughed. I watched the entire like 3-minute infomercial because it was so good.
I got to check that out.
I'll find it and send it to you. Oh my God.
And then I got to order that thing. I need it.
Yeah, I know. Oh, it looked horribly uncomfortable. They employed all of the infomercial tactics, every single one. It was pretty classic. It was almost spoof-like, but I think it was real.
All right, guys. Well, we are out of time here for questions. This has been another great episode. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. You know, as Jordan had pointed out, there's some things that we've kind of covered before. So if there's anything we come across that we've already answered and we're seeing doubles, I'm probably going to try to start skipping those things so we can get up, you know, caught up a little bit closer to where questions are being asked currently, because we've gotten a little bit behind. But, you know, this has been all really good stuff. And thank you, everybody, you know, once again for submitting questions. We really appreciate it. So I know, Jordan, you have a rest day today. Scott, are you training?
Today is also a day off for me. I'm taking care of various and sundry, errand day.
Nice. I'm going to go hit some 20 rep sets on chest today, apparently. That's the game plan.
What's that, Scott?
I'm doing chest today, so it looks like I'll be hitting some, you know, kind of a, would you call that deloading, hitting 20, going for 20 reps? I mean, I'm still going to be going, you know, to failure, so I don't know if you would quite call that a deloading workout, would you?
I'm probably not. I mean, I
think it's like with if everything is sort of going down a notch, like your whole, that was sort of what I would think of as a deload. You're just introducing some variation in your rep ranges. The workaround.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be doing some chest workaround today. So
cool,
guys. Good to be here with you as always. I appreciate it.
Likewise, my man.
For Advices Radio, this has been another episode of Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally with Jordan Peters and Dr. Scott Stevenson.
Advices Radio Network.